This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Young fellow in the studio, you've met him before. You're going to have a little chat with him again. His name is Gavin Baker. Welcome back to Cravings.
Hi, Pete.
I love having you in because I can listen to you talk. You have rather a mellifluous accent.
Thank you.
It's very easy to have you in. We want to talk today because you and Pete are about to open another couple of venues.
Yeah, on the same day. Seemed like one was too easy, so we decided to open two at once. It's either the most amazing thing we've ever done or the most ridiculous.
Stupidest, maybe. Yeah. Why two on one day? Did it just make sense?
You know, they shared the same space. So we had this massive space. It was about a 300 square meter floor plan. And it was double high. So we put a mezzanine in and decided to separate them.
And call it something else.
And charge rent on both.
Excellent. So let's talk, Kiara, because you're doing a bit of a launch event for that in a couple of weeks.
We are. There's going to be a dinner at some point.
A gathering of folk like me.
Several dinners, actually, over the course of a month. We're just going to spread the celebration out.
Excellent. And what is Kiara? What's the motivation behind it? Give us an idea of style, of cuisine.
In a nutshell, it's contemporary Italian.
Mm-hmm. What is contemporary Italian?
We've got a very talented chef in the kitchen, and we give him a lot of creative license. So It's much like a lot of our cooking is rooted in classics.
Yep.
With not too much of a governor on how creative they can be, so... I wouldn't say that there's a tremendous amount of bells and whistles and things in the kitchen, but we give them a lot of license. So,
and I suppose we should say the Pete we're talking about is somebody well known to you and I, but perhaps not to the rest, is Pete Evans. You may have seen him on the TV once or twice.
Yeah, every now and then.
He's that bloke with the activated almonds and the cacao nibs. So the other venues down there all going very well for you as well?
It's going over like hotcakes, Pete.
So, how long has it been over?
Bar Nacional's been there since September.
Is it that long? That's nearly 9 months.
It's been 8 or 9 months, and Long Shot, our coffee shop, was just picked up as one of Good Food's best 10 cafes in Melbourne, which is good.
There you go. And that's a very stiff amount of competition.
There's a lot of coffee in Melbourne. You may have seen some.
There's a lot of caffeinated people in Melbourne as well.
Yeah, we're quite proud.
Yes, you should be. It's a wonderful achievement. So... Kiara, and what are you calling the mezzanine level? Where's the separation of?
It's a catering company. We decided to get wacky with it and call it Baker and Evans Catering.
Wow, who'd have thunk it? That's just genius.
Yeah, it's an interpretive piece.
Yes, and so what's the catering company going to be doing?
Our first port of call is all of our tenants at Collins Square, yep. Which is growing by the day.
For those not familiar with the geography of Collins Square?
Just past the Age Building, where 707 Collins is sort of the hub.
Yeah.
So quite literally past the Age Building.
Yes.
It's down
on this end of Southern Cross Station. Mm-hmm.
Across the street from the Medibank Building.
Excellent.
There's only a couple of towers in there now, maybe 6,000, 7,000 people, but we're on the fast track to about 20,000.
Much residential?
No, but you know, the Docklands is growing fast.
Yeah,
it's
it is.
It's the largest growing area inside of the city. There's a good 4 or 5 developments that are around us that sort of touch our shores on Collins Square, and half of them are residential. So.
Well, that's good because as much as business Monday to Friday is great, you also want people who are going to be there and supportive over the weekend.
You do. We've been successful, surprisingly. I mean, people said that the odds were a bit against us, but we've done rather well. But we are, and our chefs love this part, we are currently only operating Monday to Friday. So probably the residential towers will change that, but we'll live it up while we can.
If you're a chef looking for a job and you need a Monday to Friday job, I'd suggest get in touch with Gavin and Pete. It's an interesting space to be in the restaurant game in this day and age where... there are as many closing as there are opening.
That's always the case.
Has that always been the case? Have you sort of seen a change since you've been in Australia around how they sort of... Is there an attrition rate or does it just seem to be the same as it's always been?
You know, I've been in this business now for a couple of decades. Only a couple of years in Australia, but it's restaurants are generally the same the world over. You know, there's always room for a good restaurant. There's, you know, just when you think there can't be another coffee shop, one opens up and you go, wow, this is really great. I'm glad they're there. So there's always room for quality.
Is it almost a little bit Darwinian, Kevin, that, that as those new ones open up and you think, God, we don't need another coffee shop, but geez, they're good. Does that mean that the guys at the back who aren't so good are dropping off?
Yeah, or they're changing their game. I mean, it's we're evolving as a species. You know, our taste evolves, food palate evolves, people are more educated. I mean, as soon as you have a good cup of coffee, then it's inevitable that your next one has to be good because you can't go backwards.
Or better.
Yeah, or better. So.
Because there's not enough time in the world for bad wine and bad coffee.
No, there's no, you know, there's always room for good food, but there's always room for improvement as well. I mean, we continually push the mark every day, so we learn something new every day, for sure.
What's the tough thing about being in this game in this city?
You know, I don't know. We're sort of, we're in our own little world down there. We've got our own set of challenges. This is the first time I've never not worked on a Saturday, even though I'm working today because we're opening on, in a couple of days. So it's a different, it's just a different set of challenges. We're in the corporate environment down there. I mean, we do sort of breakfast, lunch, dinner. You know, convincing people, at the beginning, convincing people to come down, you know, to cross that imaginary, you know,
well, that line border. that is Spencer Street.
I know it was there was a bit of a stretch to begin with, but I think the chefs and the quality of food that, that is going on down there have caused a lot of people to start to cross the line. So,
well, I live in a part of the world where people won't come across a bridge to visit, but we will come back to that shortly. We're also going to meet a winemaker with who with his mate, both who were former musos. Got a bit disillusioned with being rock and roll stars and decided to develop a wine label. Their story is interesting. Two really cool guys. We're going to speak to the one of them in just a little while. And a bit later in the program, we will be speaking with, of course, Marco Pierre White.
Joy 94.9.
Gavin Baker's here in the studio. We're having a bit of a yarn about Collins Square and the new venture, which is Chiara Contemporary Italian, opening in a little while. You guys seem to take on some interesting challenges. So Spanish, Italian, what's next? And can a couple of white boys cook Spanish and Italian food as well as Spanish or Italian people can?
So far. so far we're doing well. Yeah, you know, it's I think we have a just a different approach to food in general. As you know Pete quite well. Yes. He's very committed to quality, as am I. So, you know, we just get really good chefs and then we build these beautiful spaces for them. We kind of let them go wild in it. So it's a very organic approach to food.
So are you guys a bit of a breeding ground for talent? Is that a fair assumption?
You know, I would hope that our chefs would echo that. I mean, we certainly build some nice spaces for them. When you get a chance to come down, and we'll sort of give you a tour, you'll see it's Chiara is a stunning fit out. It's gorgeous. I'm not easily impressed. Impressed with it.
At what point do you stop being a chef and become more of a businessman? And it seems to have, I know it's happened with Pete, and it sort of seems to have happened with you as well. You're more focused on building businesses where you can, as you say, give chefs a playground or a sandbox to play in. How much do you still cook?
Well, I'm always a chef. I will never be anything but a chef. I just happen to be building restaurants at the moment. I mean, I think it's good to sort of keep the end game in mind. I hold on to this vision and this idea that at some point I'm going to build my own. And play in it, but right now I'm having so much fun. It just doesn't seem to be any end in sight.
And I guess it's probably a different world. And this is sort of where I wanted to go with this: that when you do build your own, then you're not going to need the influence of Pete, or you might need somebody's money, but it's not going to be driven by anybody else. And I know that you and Pete get along really well. You have a wonderful working relationship. So it's sort of almost that. That interesting point. At what point do you stop being someone's business partner and take that risk and jump in, get your toe into the icy water?
I think it depends on sort of where you are. Right now, I'm in such a good place. I absolutely love getting up every day and going to work, and the partnership is really, really good between Pete Lang and myself. So I'm not in any rush. I mean, it's not like I'm doing this in hopes of sort of moving on and doing something else. Right now, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, so it's a good place. You know, so I don't I don't know sort of what the future holds. I know that sort of the next year or so, we're looking at quite a few restaurants down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really taken to it a bit like a fish to water. I mean, I've been in kitchens for the last 18 some years and building them for the last sort of two. And I'm really enjoying the last two. You know, it's a different work ethic. But
for those people that don't know you, who haven't heard our last chats, let's have a little bit of a yarn about sort of where you came from, because you had joined the Marines.
I did, yeah, right out of high school. That was my get out of jail free card out of rural North Carolina, where people used to drive tractors to school.
Really?
Yeah.
I actually was coming through country Victoria the other day. Stopped in a little town to get a coffee, and there was a guy on a horse and cart.
Well, that's fantastic.
So things haven't changed that much. But sorry, so you're in rural North Carolina. Not the most scholarly of individuals?
No, it's definitely the type of place where I think the biggest aspiration was to get a trailer and put it next to your parents' trailer, and then that was you.
Right.
That was good.
That was aspirational.
But I had the fortune of having an English mother.
Right.
This strange little lady would show up every other year with a suitcase full of candy, which was my grandmother, and I knew that there must have been something else. And Marmite. I attribute all of my traveling to Marmite.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you still eat Marmite?
I love it.
It's good. I can eat it by the spoon.
I love it.
It's very good.
I won't get into the Marmite Vegemite thing, but...
I was about to say, do you eat Vegemite as well?
Only if I have to.
Right. Desperate times call for desperate measures, I should guess. So the Marines didn't work, so your brother was a chef, or working in a restaurant, and you...
You know, I actually started cooking because I was crap at architecture.
Right.
That's how it all started. I did 4 years in the Marine Corps, and I'd always wanted to be an architect, and finally decided to go to school for it, and I got there and realized that this is horrible. This is nothing like what I thought it was going to be, so I just sort of dropped out and did that thing that you do when you're 22 and you have no idea what you want to do, which is drift around, sleep on people's couches, go to lots of clubs.
have a good time.
And I had all this money from the, you know, because I spent 4 years in the Marine Corps, so
right.
you get this GI Bill, and yeah. I had this money to go to school and had nowhere to go, and I just sort of went to a community college, which turned out to have one of the best culinary programs in the nation for about... my entire culinary education was about $5,000. It was amazing. And then went to New York.
And the rest, as they say.
Mm, yeah, from there, I just never really looked back.
I caught up with Marco Pierre White, and I'm going to play in that discussion in a little while, and he talks a lot about discipline.
Mm.
He talks a lot about his role as a mentor, and we talk a bit about pressure from Michelin stars. Isn't there a certain point in your career where you get to a stage where you think, I now have to be a mentor, I now have to give other people the opportunities that I was given? Is that a natural progression, do you think?
It is. I mean, there's you're obviously well-versed in sort of the difference between leadership and management, and everyone thinks they want to be the boss. You know, but there's a big difference between being a good leader and a good role model and a good mentor and being able to sort of manage things. So I think the leadership part is natural, and you sort of, if you're a natural leader in the kitchen, you'll just automatically sort of move up those ranks. But there is a lot of pressure. I mean, I've worked in a lot of Michelin caliber kitchens, a lot of Michelin starred kitchens.
You can drop a hell of a lot of names to the people you've worked with.
I can. I'll just drop the last one, which is I spent about two years and 3 months with Heston out of the Fat Duck.
Yeah.
And Heston,
now he's bringing it to Melbourne,
which is great.
Oh, it's so exciting.
I've got some good friends coming back this way, which is fantastic.
Excellent, but, yes.
You know, Heston is proof that you do not have to treat people poorly or to treat people with disrespect and still be number one in the world.
Exactly.
So.
And he is a really, really, really good guy. So
he is.
Very excited that he's bringing the duck to Melbourne. And, you know, he had offers from all over the world.
Mm. I remember that when I was there. I mean, I was there from 2008 till 2011. Mm. And he was talking about moving then. And at the time, obviously, I had no clue I was coming to Melbourne.
Mm.
And then I finally get here and do some things. And then he's not just coming to Melbourne. He's moving down the street.
Yes, exactly. And bringing the whole shebang with him.
Which is great.
His entire team are coming, or half of his equipment's coming.
Part of it is for practical reasons. I mean, like I said, he was trying to move back then. They've been I'm not sure if you're familiar, but the Fat Duck is in a building that's 450 years old. The Fat Duck is older than the United States.
Yes.
You know. And you can't just go in there sort of willy-nilly making changes.
It's all going to go through council and...
They finally, from what I understand, I mean, you may correct me when I see them, but they finally have gotten all the approval that they need to do some of the reconstruction and things that they need at the Fat Duck. Because it's a very interesting setup. I mean, the kitchen at the Fat Duck is... very small. It's about the size of this studio. Mm. And out the back of it, which used to be the pub garden, is the series of sheds. So I think they're sort of revamping it a bit. And this is a good time for him to take the show on the road.
It's very exciting. And then when he leaves, there will be a legacy left, which will be dinner.
Absolutely. It's the fifth best restaurant in the world currently. So, I mean, it's a good legacy to leave.
So. I'm wondering if we'll ever see Michelin stars come out of Australia.
It's inevitable. I think you will at some point, for sure.
Well, I mean, we are now, we're a global community. We're no longer a European or a North or an American community. We are, in fact, global. And the influence of Asia in the top 100 restaurants on the San Pell list means that Michelin has to follow.
Well, you know, it's good to have some sort of rating that you can put to any restaurant anywhere. You know, the chef hat is it's reputable in its own right, but it's hard to sort of to compare that against Michelin stars. Where does it fall? Those things, and it works for Australia, and it's worked. And we just got Michelin stars in the U.S. not that long ago, so it's taken a while for it to sort of leave Europe to begin with.
Bit of an archaic organization. Gavin Baker is my guest in the studio. We're very shortly going to talk to.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.